Get the best quality paints from Dutch Boy for all your projects at Menards. MaxBond Plus exterior paint and primer in one is designed to stand strong against extreme weather. It provides max adhesion, hide, and performance, and repels rain in just 90 minutes after application. And with Dutch Boy's high-performing paints that last, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards today and get your paint project started.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block, ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi. This is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, technicians, investors who are revolutionising the UK healthcare industry, not just in the UK, but globally. As regular listeners know, I am a CEO and founder of a health tech business myself, which is called PocDoc. PocDoc is in the game of revolutionising access to critical cardiovascular, metabolic, and renal screening, enabling it to be done by smartphone or tablet 100 times faster, 100 times cheaper. We're currently scaling out across various NHS institutions in the UK and pharmacies, and also now through retail. And we just announced our nationwide partnership with Asda, which is very exciting. So if you'd like to know more about our Healthy Heart Check, so in 10 minutes, you can get the equivalent of an NHS health check done at home in the comfort of your home. Please check out pocdoc.co. That's P-O-C-D-O-C.co. Thank you, as ever, to everyone listening, whether you're listening live on UK Health Radio. We love UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for the live platform. Johan and his team are absolutely outstanding, as are all of the other presenters on the station. So there's tons of other people for you to go and listen to. So thank you very much for that live platform. Thank you, obviously, if you're listening on any of the podcast channels where we are 5-star rated. That's great. Thank you very much for that. We're up on all of the major ones. Please leave a rating. It's much appreciated. It makes a big, big difference to the visibility of the show on those platforms. And thank you if you're watching this on YouTube or on Instagram. So we slice up the show into what we consider to be the most interesting shorts, and then we put them out through my Instagram channel, which is at Steve Roost. So yeah, good. Got all the admin out of the way. For those of you that listened to last week's show, this show is completely different to last week's show. Last week's show was with Richard McGregor, who is the head of digital and performance at Cumbria Health. So for those of you in the UK who don't know where Cumbria is, and for those of you not from the UK that have no idea what a Cumbria is at all, Cumbria is the most remote and rural region in the UK. And actually, it's now become the front runner of adoption of remote and digital technologies to solve major health issues, purely driven by its remoteness and ruralness. So, for example, it's not uncommon to have an hour's drive to a GP surgery, for example. And so mother being the necessity of invention, they've now become one of the leading adopters, as I said, of digital and remote technology across the region. So yeah, it was a great show. Check it out. This week's show, we've never had a type of guest like this on before. So it's new ground for us. So we're just gonna see how it goes, I guess. So there's probably as we have a broad church listening, everyone's probably heard of what a conference is, but I'm guessing some people listening haven't really heard about health or HLTH, where you skip out the E and the A, so HLTH. So HLTH began life in Las Vegas. It's the largest health conference in the world, one of the most exciting, one of the most vibrant. And there's now, as of last year, an edition in Europe, which I went to. I was lucky enough to go. And not just me, but every single person that went said it was by some distance the best health conference that they've been to outside the United States. It blew every other health conference in Europe out of the water for me. And that view was pretty consistent across the board. And we're very lucky on today's show to have one of the key people behind health in Europe, Henry Stoneley. Henry, welcome to the show. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Thanks for that lovely intro as well. It's glad you enjoyed it.
It's what we do. We do great intros on this show. But no, joking aside, like, it was an awesome, awesome event. And in the lead up to this, because it's in Amsterdam, right?
It is, yep.
And is that, it's staying there, is it? For the foreseeable?
Amsterdam ticks so many boxes for us. It's and it's a brilliant city, first and foremost, but it's also super convenient. It's got, you know, one of the highest levels of English literacy of any European capital. I think the highest outside of London and Dublin, and Belfast, obviously. And so high English literacy, easy to get to, really lovely people, and lots of nice things to do close to the event venue. One of the big problems with big venues is that they're often in, you know, out in the middle of nowhere or industrial areas, and that gives you a bit of a dearth of things to do once, you know, the programming's ended and people are looking around. People are good, you know, a good 4-day experience, not just 4 days in the daytime, but also before and after. So it's, I can't see us moving from Amsterdam ever.
Yeah, it was a good location. I think we can jump into some stuff first, but sort of my impression of it was that it was, I'm not quite sure how you did it, and maybe you don't want to give away the secret sauce, but you managed to get, first and foremost, just an unbelievable set of hitters, high quality attendees and speakers, all in the same place, all at the same time, all highly motivated to talk to each other. Because I've definitely been to conferences where you show up and the vibe is sort of like not particularly social and not particularly up for a chit chat, you know? And then I guess that raises the question about why those people would go to a conference in the first place.
It's one of our big, I really don't like the phrase USP, but it is one of our sort of USPs, is that about 35% of the audience is the CEO of the organization they work for. And from a speaking perspective, Lena Behrens, who runs all of our content, is just a monster in terms of getting the right people there. And that then attracts the right audience, and these things are sort of self-perpetuating. But it's very deliberate that we get the most senior people in the room. There's not no point, but one of the things that we're always looking to do is maximize that number so that you have got decision maker talking to decision maker, because that's how stuff changes, it's how stuff gets done. And as a former salesperson, maybe a salesperson in remission, I know that packing against people is the easiest thing in the world, but it's not that useful. So
I think with sales you're only ever in recovery, you know.
You're never
not a salesperson, you're just in recovery.
I think, yeah, it's one of those, you know, if someone was to, you know, send me a DocuSign link, I'd probably relapse pretty quickly. So
that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, DocuSign. A DocuSign and I'm only one. So yeah, sadly.
So there's quite a lot. So I want to jump around a little bit, but I think maybe it's some context. Yeah. For everybody listening, and actually for me, really. So, like, how did the journey with this conference start? Because the US version, which is in Vegas, is an absolute monster, from what I understand. I mean, it's enormous and unbelievable profile, unbelievable sort of prestige, and by all accounts, unbelievably fun as well.
Yeah.
But like, what's the backstory? Like, how did that start? And then how did Europe happen? And how do you segue into the whole thing?
I segued into it by saying no to the job, and now I'm talking to you about it. It's an absolute nightmare. Such a terrible story. But so the history of health Europe, I suppose, and the history of health is that John Weiner, who's our CEO, founder, John had a fintech startup, financial tech startup in the like mid-early noughties, kind of 2008-ish. I should probably be better prepped on the detail than that. But he sold it to Google. He became Google's VP of payments, and he kept going to fintech conferences, which were, like every other conference, kind of a grey room full of grey people talking about grey things. Like, this is a really exciting industry. Like,
yeah,
why are we doing it this way? So John left Google, founded a fintech event called Money 2020 in Las Vegas. That became the world's biggest sort of senior leadership fintech event. After, I think, even within two editions, it had become that. Launched a European one, sold that on, did the same thing in loads of different industries. So he's got HumanX at the moment as well, which is an AI event that they're launching in Vegas this year. And he's worked in edutech, and he's worked in lots of different industries. And the model is essentially most conferences or trade shows, and we don't really think of ourselves as either of those, it's much more of an event, are designed like all the others. And people are a little bit scared to innovate with them because the margins in events are tiny. They're very small as an industry generally. And that means that you end up being very risk averse. It's a bit like health tech procurement within the NHS, right? People will end up going with incumbents and people they know because, well, we know this works. This is what an event is. And the idea behind all of the events that John has set up is that that's not really the right way of doing it. You want the most senior people there, and you want them talking about the most challenging things. And then you want to make sure that they feel welcome and involved and part of a community. It's very much about, and everyone and their mum talks about building a community these days, but
yes, what we're
doing and trying to do is really like create something that does have a sort of family feel to it. My favorite bit of feedback of the whole event, and there was some really lovely feedback, including from you, someone said it was the first work event I'd been to where the default greeting was a hug, not a handshake.
Oh, yes.
And it's really, just really to have that, like, that relationship with your audience and make them feel like family. Like, that's a big thing for us.
Yeah. So going back a couple of steps, what is or what was the default way to run a conference? Like you mentioned that, like, John thought that was not the right way. So how does a normal conference run? What normally happens?
Pack as many people into the room as you can, regardless of their seniority, and get people to pay for speaking slots.
Right.
What you end up with is several thousand salespeople, and again, as we discussed, in remission or recovery. So several thousand salespeople listening to a guy, it's always a guy, pitching their product. So you'll see the session title, and this is why I turned the job down originally, because I didn't understand how health worked. So you'll see the session title. It might be something that you have an interest in. So for me, having sold into the NHS for years, I've always been really interested in learning about sort of alternatives to procurement. No offense to anyone in procurement listening, but a nightmare. Not you individually, procurement people. But
yeah, no, sure, understood.
Just offend the audience. I've always been interested in those sort of alternative routes into organizations. And you'll see a session that's like scaling within Leicester University Hospitals. Like, great, cool, you go to that. And then a guy gets up, it's always a guy. There's a 95% chance he's called Phil as well. That seems to be like a theme.
No offense to any Phils listening.
it's my godfather's name. It's a beautiful name. Phil pitches to you. He just pitches his product at you. And there is, and you'll have, let's say you've got 50 people in the audience, quite well attended for a session at a lot of events. Of those 50, maybe two can buy from Phil. Maybe. Right. Realistically, or any of them, maybe there's one of those two is interested in having a further conversation. But for everyone else, and if you're a right little nerd like me, you sit at the front with your notebook, and then I'm also incredibly British as well as nerdy, so I can't leave. I couldn't possibly leave. That would be rude. But I'm going to sit there for 35 minutes and listen to someone sell me something that I will never, ever have any interest or ability to buy.
So how of all of the within conferences and stuff, like of your estimated, how much of the the spoken content is basically paid for, do you think?
It varies massively from event to event, but it's never less than, in my experience, and you know, everyone's experiences will vary, but my experience of UK conferences, it's never really less than 50%. That's how they survive. That's how they make money. They generate money in that way. Pack as many people in and get people to pay to be on stage. And we don't do any of that. We want to keep it at a certain size. We want to have the most senior people there. And we have never done and never will do across all of the events John set up, pay to play. It's just you
yeah.
can be
so that was one of his big things from the get-go, irrespective of the conference, was like, I'm just going to create really good content and I'm not going to pay for content.
Well, you can't have challenging conversations if someone's sponsoring it. Healthcare is the most risk-averse sector in the world, right? Very natural, I think. People bemoan it, but actually, of all the things I want to be risk-averse, probably healthcare is the most.
I think that's a fair position, yeah.
But that means that bleeds into everything that people do. So when people create content and it's sponsored, and someone's paid to be on stage, you don't want to offend anyone. And we're not in the business of offending people. I don't set out, apart from people called Phil, apparently, based on my tirade a few minutes ago. So we're not in the business of offending people, setting up to irritate people. But what we want to do is have the most challenging conversations that should be on stage. The ones that, you know, we all have behind closed doors and we all talk about when it's in the pub or sat at home or whoever. Yeah. Why are we not talking about those publicly?
Well, I think, again, we're a broad church and, you know, welcome any comments and input from any of the listeners or viewers or wherever you're like consuming this content. My experience of conferences predominantly is that if you get a very low hit rate of interesting people you bump into, maybe it pays off the one or the £2,000 or whatever it is in the couple of days off and the flights and the hotel and things like that. I generally have never found any of the speeches or talks at a conference particularly enlightening in any phase of my career. And I think one thread that was consistent across that for me is, irrespective whether the content was bought, which I don't know whether it was or it wasn't, but the consistent theme for me before you telling me that it might very well have been paid for is like, no one says anything particularly interesting. Like no one's saying it. No one's giving you a peek behind the curtain. No one's saying anything challenging. No one's saying anything that's going to spark anything, because the conference is full of, quote, their competitors, or they feel like it's effectively an advertising platform for what they're trying to communicate, which is very, very different, you know, to what you guys kind of came up with.
It has to be, though. You could go to a healthcare event every week throughout the entire, I guarantee there's one that is the week between Christmas and New Year somewhere. And I'm absolutely not going to that. Full of turkey and cheese, it'd be horrific.
Yeah.
If we just did the same thing, it would be an entire, it would be a complete waste of time. And so,
I think what is interesting is like when I heard about it, like before, like obviously I've not been to health in Vegas, so full disclosure. At some point, you know, watch this space. PocDoc may or may not be heading stateside, so that you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But when I, because the perceived wisdom, I'm guessing, like you just said, was that launching a healthcare conference in Europe is, quote, really competitive and really difficult, and there's loads of healthcare conferences already. So, like, was there something that happened or some opportunity that you then, somebody realized, like, oh, my God, the time is now. We've got to go take health to Europe.
No, I wasn't here when that decision was made. But what I do know, employed 4 or 5 or something in Europe. What I do know is that, you know, the US event, the growth of European attendees at the US event was rapid, and it was going up and up every year. But also that we spend a huge amount of time talking to our audience. Like all of my summer was speaking to people who attended, people who didn't attend, on both the like provider and health tech side of things for various reasons. But one of them was to be like, how do we improve? How do we do better? Our NPS scores are really great, but actually really hard to build off the back of a really positive review. So we spend a lot of time talking to the audience, and the US team at both Health in Vegas and Vive, the sister event we run, which is much more like healthcare IT focus, knew that the audience was like, this is great, but if you are European, Vegas is a long way. Like, it's great, it's a lovely.
Well, it's a long way, and it's a big ticket. You know what I mean? It's a big spend for anyone not in the US.
Exactly, and so there was a clamor for Europe, but as I said, and as you mentioned, there are so many healthcare events in Europe, and absolutely something different. So the company, and again, before I joined, knew that
this week, they made the decisions while you still said no to the job, right? It was that period where you were saying no. Is that correct?
Yeah, I said no quickly. But no, that's the second sentence that came out of my mouth when Katie, the managing director of Europe, rang me. Literally, no. I just felt I'm never going to work for an event. And you know, nearly exactly 2 years on, I'm talking to you about it. So
yeah.
Awesome, that one.
Yeah, good job. Yeah, look, you know, at least you were proud enough to realize that your initial read was wrong and then you went back and corrected it.
No, I said no for two reasons. One, the content one that we've already discussed. Like, I'm a journalist by training. That's my original background. And so the content used to annoy me. And the other one was exactly what you said about people not interacting. So as someone who worked in sales, there's these very closed off kind of little groups of people and you need to speak to them. You need to find the right folk, but they're often not the right location, the right setting for genuine commercial discussions. So we run a program called Connect that I run, which is exactly that and does create those spaces. And so once they'd explained that the content wasn't sponsored and we could talk about challenging things, interesting things, and that there was an opportunity for people to get in front of the people who could progress their technology, I was like, ah, sorry, I was wrong. Can I gambling back?
Can I get a quick rewind on the no?
Just a big slice of humble pie, and I was wrong, and I have never been more delighted to be wrong.
So we've got to go for a quick commercial break now. We'll be back in 2 minutes. When we come back, I want to talk and dig into this interactions bit, because it's very easy to say, and I suspect if I bothered to look, every single conference of any genre talks about creating connections and interactions and stimulating networking and stuff. Easy to say, extremely hard to do. So I'd love to dig into a little bit of the magic, because I don't know how you did what you did, but you did do it. So I'd love to try and, you know, get a little bit under the skin there about what makes the difference, you know? So we'll be back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Get the best quality paints from Dutch Boy for all your projects at Menards. Maxbond Plus exterior paint and primer in one is designed to stand strong against extreme weather. It provides max adhesion, hide, and performance, and repels rain in just 90 minutes after application. And with Dutch Boy's high-performing paints that last, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards today and get your paint project started.
Save big money at
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. We make it easy for you to enhance your outdoor living space with the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a fire pit or retaining wall with our tumbled Belgian wall blocks. On sale now. Save big on your landscaping project at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, CEO of PocDoc and host of the Health Tech Hour, and my guest today, Henry Stoneley, who is one of the leaders of what has, within one edition, become the leading health conference in Europe. So, Henry, before the break, we were talking about like some of the points of difference around good conferences, useful conferences, not specifically yours, just more like in general. And one of the things that you picked up on was this idea that everyone says they want to go to conferences to interact and network and grow their community and build and things like that. So like how feasible is that to do, and how much can an organizer control or influence that process versus it just sort of like, it's just like alchemy and it happens or it doesn't happen?
Loads is the short answer to how much an organizer can control stuff. So you will see lots of events that talk about like the serendipity of connections, and there's an element of that, but largely if you're relying on serendipity, it's a lovely word, but if you're relying on serendipity, we as an event organizer would not be doing our job properly. That's relying on serendipity for people to get in front of the right people would be like trying to flog clothes on Oxford Street by standing in the middle of Oxford Street and shouting socks into the sky. It's just a complete lottery, right? So we don't rely on that. We will never rely on serendipity. It's great. And one of the things that comes out of it a lot is people go, I bumped into so-and-so in the queue to get coffee, or I was just grabbing a bagel and this person was there and I've been trying to get hold of them for 6 months and now we're running a pilot. Love that. I love all of it, but it's very deliberate from our side. And the other thing is that you have to run programs that allow people to do exactly what events should be for, which is making links between people who have answers and people who have problems. That is all that like floor space is about. That's what an event is for. There's amazing content on the stages so you can learn, but you also need to get the commercial value out of it. If you are a, you know, health tech company, for example, that is about connection. So you build programs like the Connect program that put you in front of CCIOs from across Europe or the US. You build a meetings app that works. Like, that's one of my other big gripes with events, is that you get these clunky, horrible apps that just don't work. And you
then... most conferences now have some kind of like app that you then try and arrange to meet people through, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'm not technical in the slightest. I know how hard those are to build, and like even when you're working with an outsource provider. And so I'm not knocking anyone else's apps. Like, they're difficult things, difficult platforms. But if I'm at an event to meet people, I want the meeting functionality of the app to be so good that it just makes everything very seamless and easy for me. I can go in, I don't have to, there's not like 80 different taps. It's like, these are the people I want to meet. I can find them easily. Here's some AI-based suggestions for people I should meet. Fine, great. And then you can start building those connections before you get there. And that's not always the case, but they are difficult to build. So it's not a dig at any other event. But yeah, you have to have programs that put the right people in the room. You have to do that. Otherwise...
Is there anything about how you, how organizers like almost lay out the streets and the grid of the event to kind of, not necessarily asking you to give us the exact plan or anything, but more like, presumably there's like venues and layouts that help and venues and layouts that definitely don't.
100%. And look, one of the reasons we love Rye and Amsterdam is exactly that. But the way that John builds his teams in both the US and Europe is that you have a couple of people who are from that industry. So in Health Europe's case, there's just two of us. It's Lena Burns, who used to be, she was BCG, and then she was the MD of Flying Health. And then there's me. Right. We're the healthcare people. Everyone else is an events person. They're events specialists. And so they've done, you know, between them, hundreds of events. We're a small team. There are 11 people in the Health Europe team. And then we have some global teams in New York. But they've done hundreds of events between them. They know what works. They know how to build things, where seating needs to be, what's the right ratio of this to that. All of this stuff is then backed up by all of the other events that John has built. We're constantly able to learn from them. They all have within their own industry, a similar field to health, right? So Fit Money 2020 has this like very bombastic, cool, excitable branding. It's no longer part of John's portfolio, but it has maintained that. And so we are, rather than learning year on year from our own event and us going, okay, Health Europe in 2024, this happened, so we're going to do this. We can go, oh, Money 2020, this happened. And this event, like all of these things mean that we're constantly evolving how people interact with the show floor and where to put things, how to put things. So it's a really exciting process, and one that I had no idea there was so much science behind before I joined Health.
Yeah, there must be so much in there around like, you know, tracking people's movement, like hotspots where people congregate, even stuff where people accidentally congregate that you never, like, for example, like there just happens to be one place that does better coffee than other places, and suddenly everyone finds that out. That always used to drive me nuts in conferences where like it wouldn't be the same, and then suddenly you'd find out that like, oh my god, the coffee over there, and then suddenly
this guy's got oat milk. So that's one of the things that really annoys me at conferences as well, is queuing for bad coffee. I feel what should be maybe not a crime, like an imprisonable way, like prison, certainly a fine. I feel like there should be a monetary fine imposed on people who serve, like the stuff from the big towers of lukewarm sadness in a cup. Yes, there is huge amounts of science that goes into that. There's a lot of review afterwards of the data and who goes where and when they go there and who's interacting with who. And then we use all of that to make it better next year. We know, you know, there are little things like we know when people will be tired. We know where, if people are tired, it's likely that they're coming out of this or they're doing this. And so we should probably have something around there. We know that the VCs want to meet startups, but they want to meet them on these days. And so you build stuff for the audience and then you go and constantly check
it. I wonder whether for the VCs as well, because what surprised me, one of the things that surprised and pleased me was that there were so many senior European VC leaders there, VC investors there, who were not only there, but they were very willing and open to discussions. And that isn't always the case in conferences. In fact, I've seen conferences where there is very, they claim there are investors there, but there's very, very few. Yeah. And they're very sporadic. And the chance of you having a meaningful conversation is very, very low, where you basically had pretty much the best of the best there. And not only the best, and another thing that I have seen is that you get the best and the best there, but actually they're on a panel and then they, you know, jog on like straight after. But that was super impressive, I thought. And I don't know quite whether that was like some kind of like side agreement with those guys or anything, or whether it was just organic and they felt really comfortable in that space.
I think that there's no side agreement. I think we're generally really transparent about like how people get there. And with the VCs, it is because our audience is so senior, they want to be
there. Right.
If they know that they can go to an event for 2 days and do, you know, all the due diligence that you want to do when you're, if you're a VC and you get sent scores of decks every week and you'd love to be able to ask a load of questions, but you realistically can't jump onto a call with every founder that sends you a deck because you'd be on course for years. But if they know that they can get 15 minutes with a founder and be like, look, I didn't get this bit. Can you talk me about, like, how does this work? What's the, you know, market cap for that? Like, how's that going to work? And do those 15-minute meetings that the Investor Connect program takes care of, then it's a much more productive use of their time. They can do 10 of those in 2 days.
I think somehow, and this is what one of the intangibles, and I don't know, you know, like sometimes you have a party and it's an amazing party and it's like an intangible and you can put all the things in place and then sometimes it just doesn't click. But what I wonder whether there's this intangible relationship between investors, and it's a bit of an unwritten bond, which is like they're willing to give up their time and their energy to speak to people as long as those people treat it respectfully and don't sort of abuse it and, I don't know, hog their time or try and over pitch them when it's actually 5 o'clock and it's more of a social sort of vibe. And, you know, I don't quite know how you sort of make that objective. That's kind of one of those intangibles.
That is, I mean, I'm sure there are ways that we could engineer that more. I do think that the VCs who came to Health, and as you said, like there were some very senior ones and almost senior. And
I mean, there were tons of partners there.
I saw
tons of VC partners just chit-chatting with founders, not even pitching, right? And just being part of a social group, which was really refreshing to see. Because it meant that actually everyone was sort of interacting on the same level as opposed to like pitcher pitchy type of, you know, relationship.
Yeah, that's the whole. And again, like it goes back to that like very cheesy building community thing. Like everyone talks about wanting to build community, but it is getting all of the most senior people in the room means that everyone just sort of feels comfortable having those conversations. People, you know, trying to get like Andrew Elder from Albion or someone like that, just trying to constantly pitch to him. It's not because he's speaking to Ian Abbs, the CEO of Guys and St. Thomas, and they are talking with, you know, the founder and CEO of a startup, but it's not a commercial conversation. It's the problems within X or like how they're doing Y. And it's social and it's friendly. And I guess it's kind and nice and normal. It is like going to a barbecue with a load of people in
tech companies.
We're just humans
and we can talk to each other like humans. So on that note, one of the things that this was one of those things, it shows how little I was paying attention before I realized I should be paying attention. I only twigged, I swear, after watching like three or four speeches, panels, I guess, I was like, I could tell there was something different. And I was like, what is different? I was a little bit jaded, a little bit tired from the flight. And so it took me a while to realize that there's no questions. There's absolutely no questions allowed after the panels, which is, I would imagine, it's the only conference I've been to like that forever. So what is the thinking there? Because it really worked. I'll tell you why I liked it, but after you give your sort of, I'd love to hear your sort of thoughts on that.
So there's two bits to this, right? Panels on stage, you've got four or five of the world's leading experts in this area. And if you build an event where, as you said earlier, people can interact constantly and it's like being at a barbecue, why would you do the questions then? You can go up and speak to those people afterwards. They're there. They're there for the duration. Like if I've got a room or a stage with the four global leading experts on diagnostics or whatever it is that I'm watching, yeah, interoperability, I want to hear them for as many minutes and seconds as I can squeeze out of them and their collective knowledge and their opinions and their thoughts. I want all of that. And it's not that questions are a bad thing, but it is often that questions are self-serving, that they are quite commercial in nature. People go, we're very interested in learning more about X. At company Y, we do. And you're like, this isn't your time to pitch. This is my time. So going back to that respectful of time thing you mentioned with VCs, right? I've given up half an hour to come and watch the A team talk about something I really care about.
Yeah.
I'm not here for that question, right? So
yeah,
that's an element of it. But the second one is, those people are around, they're on the floor, they're walking around. Go grab them, go find them and be like, hey, I saw you in the robotics panel earlier on, or in the...
Yeah, is it like a forced way to get people to talk to each other?
Yeah, I guess so. I wouldn't say forced, but it's very much we want to create a vibe where there is no one in an ivory tower, like no one is locked away as, you can't possibly speak to this person because they're very important and you're just a nobody. That's not what health's for, right? It's about people who interact. And so those questions can be self-serving and also they speak to them. Like, they're not scary or weird. They're humans. You're at barbecue. Yeah.
The thing for me was is the self-serving bit. Like, the questions are almost every single question is not a question. Almost. It's a statement. And it's like you said, I work for company such and such, and we've got this product, and I'd really be interested in your thoughts on my product, and my product does this and this, that, and the other. And, and actually even that itself is disguised as a question. Most of the time, if I go to other health conferences, particularly ones that involve individuals from the public sector, love you guys, but a lot of them don't even pretend it's a question. They just say stuff. Like, I'm like, what? We just get to say stuff now at this point? Like a list of people just standing up making declarations? Like, what is this?
It's like some weird town hall forum sometimes.
Yeah.
You've got every NIMBY within an 8-mile radius at the local planning committee meeting, and they all want to say their piece. And none of them are, very often, they're not, nothing is linked. It's a complete non sequitur. It's maybe related to some of the people on stage and their capacity to, purchase solutions. But it's very rarely like, oh, that was an interesting discussion. Could you drill down more into this? It is, as you've identified. I'm here to pitch. And kudos to them for having the gumption to do that in a room full of people who are rolling their eyes so hard that you can hear the eye roll.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't do that. I wouldn't want to do that. So there's an element of me that goes, yeah, well played. But that's not what we're for. It wasn't even a big deliberation before the event. It wasn't like, not are we on with the question.
Is that the same way in all of your, is it Andrews?
John.
John, is it the same way in all of his conferences? No questions, or is it a bit comme ci, comme ça?
I don't know the answer to that, actually. I was at Money 2020 in 2023 in Amsterdam. I know literally nothing about fintech. And I can't remember off the top of my head. I don't know. I can find out though.
I thought it was super interesting because the one thing that I did immediately notice after noticing that there were no questions was there was almost no delays in the schedule, right? It was like you just knew where everything was. It was on time. It like ran on time. Stuff was like, and that was really helpful because it meant you could schedule meetings in around stuff. Yeah. Whereas like I've been to conferences where people just, and if the moderator isn't that strong, then they'll just let it run. You're going to get like 20 minutes of questions.
Yeah.
The whole day just goes back by 20 minutes.
Yep. And you miss things. And one of the, I've never really thought about this before. When Katie RMD was interviewing me, one of the questions she asked me was, what's something at work that really annoys you? And I was like, nothing. I'm pretty,
I'm so happy. I love work.
And she was like, no, I can't. Things, everyone gets annoyed by stuff. And I was like, no, honestly, I'm so laid back, I'm horizontal.
Yeah.
Except when it comes to getting work done. And I'm, you know.
yes.
She's like, come on, tell me something that annoys you. And it's almost like that thing in Austin Powers where there's the henchman who, if you ask him the same question three times, he has to answer. It's a compulsion. Yeah. I was like, no, it's people not putting agendas in meetings. I hate it. I can't stand it. It's your time and it's my time. Please just tell me what you want to talk about for 30 minutes, however long it is. And I was like, came out of my mouth. And I was like, whoo, that was, I feel quite passionate about that. But these are the people that held are the most senior people in the industry. We have to be respectful of the time. Stuff has to be efficient. It has to be organized. If we know that they've just come off a panel and they're going to want to eat or they're going to want to grab something, everything has to be thought about. Yeah. And the advantage of having this team who've done hundreds of events between them is that they've thought about these things before. They've done it on someone else's time, and now it's second nature to them. So yeah, it is. It's a respect thing. Like, very senior people have very limited time. Let's maximize their time there. So by Thursday afternoon, they're exhausted, but they've done a month's worth of stuff in those 4 days.
Yeah. No, I thought it was one of those weird tiny things that like goes against perceived wisdom, but really worked. So we're going to go for our last commercial break now in this week's show with Henry Stoneley, who is one of the leaders of Health Europe, which is one of the newest but becoming the most exciting health conference in Europe. Henry, after the break, I want to pick up on something you said right at the beginning of the show, which was that sort of, I can't remember this stat that you threw out sort of somewhat flippantly, but basically the vast majority of speakers at conferences tend to be men. But so I want to pick up on this man versus women versus representation, diversity sort of discussion, because I know you guys had a specific women's health stage, but there was a debate actually even on the conference floor, which you may or may not have been aware of, about whether that was like kind of the right thing or the wrong thing. And it's sort of like, so we can dig into that after the break. And then I also want to dig in a little bit more in like your journey to get to this point, you as a person. So we'll be right back after 2 minutes for the last part of this week's Health Tech Hour.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest, Henry Stoneley. So, Henry, at Health, well, at the beginning of the show, we were having a discussion around the sort of, you know, general gender-based makeup of events is heavily skewed in favor of men versus women, particularly on panels. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that, I would imagine that trends even more strongly in certain sectors that are overrepresented, but let's just like stay within health for a second. So like, were you very conscious about that when you put health together, and how did that like manifest itself?
So my sort of the original remit for a bit of my role was to do some of the content alongside Lena, and I write the long form agenda, and I help Lena Burns, our head of content, with that. But before we started, the only person I spoke to outside of interview was Lena. So it was really important that we sat down and we had a conversation about what was important to us when it came to who gets on stage and why they're on stage, because that is, we exist to create great content and amazing connections. And that's very cheesy marketing-ish line that is not one of our official lines, but the content to me is really important, and to the whole team, to all of our guests as well. The two things that we were both from the off
determined to do, which we hit, was to be 50% male, 50% female in terms of who was on stage. And we did that exactly 50-50. We had an odd number of speakers, so technically, not exactly. And to make sure that we were more, I guess, more racially diverse than the average organizations that we work with. So there is still a very limited amount of racial diversity in senior leadership across European healthcare. As it goes, the UK is not the worst in that regard. We are better than other places, but we're still not great. And so we needed to make sure that not only do you have the best people on stage, but that everyone in the audience who is, you know, their career is growing, that they can see themselves on stage in the future, that they can see there's an inspiration, there's a hope, there's an aspirational piece to it that goes, oh, when I go to normal events, it's four balding blokes who went to school together. That's that guy there, that we share opinions or we share something, or like the woman who's talking about this is someone that I really aspire to. You have to create that. You have to create that next generation piece. Otherwise, you end up in this self-perpetuating thing where, yes, you will get very brave, bold, brilliant people who will push forwards and kind of, you know, go and grab that thing that seems to be gatekept. But why create artificial gates to it? Like, we want to be open and transparent and, you know, for everyone to have the opportunity to do that. So, yeah, it was hugely, hugely important to us. It is something that every single content meeting, that was one of the things we check in on. How do we feel about this? Does this panel reflect, you know, our audience? Does it reflect the continent? It is a constant, constant question. And it's, I think we're really proud of it. I think we should be proud of it. I would guess,
like, once you take money off the table in terms of how you program content, it allows you to have a lot more control over the makeup of the speakers and the people involved in that. So because otherwise, if money's gone as an imperative, then you can control the split.
Yeah. And look at who gets funding, right? So something like 4% now in like 2023 of VC funding went to women in across all sectors, but in healthcare
went to businesses, you know, with a women sole founder or like
female sole founder or two female founders. Like, there are lots of parents. So like under 4%, which is wild. And then look at the ethnic diversity of who raises. It's predominantly it is people who look like you and I. That's a great thing to say on radio, isn't it? But like,
we've got YouTube and Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So it's white men who get funding most of the time. And so if they're the ones getting funding, they're the ones who can afford to pay to be on stage. If they can pay to be on stage, they can boost their profile and get more funding. Yep. Again, you're just creating a cycle. So you take the money out of it and you democratize what happens on stage. Suddenly, the whole thing is a totally different ballgame.
Well, and also you, and kind of like, Another sort of interpretation of that is that it's only the companies with enough money to spend on expensive speaking slots that get expensive speaking slots. So you might get lots of. It was one of the reasons why I started this show, to be honest with you, was when we were on one of the NHS Digital Accelerator. There were so many businesses there that were doing incredible things and founders that had dedicated their lives to really making life better for everyone in the country, and they couldn't get broadcast coverage because they weren't set up that way. They didn't have large PR departments. They didn't have millions of pounds to spend on communications budgets and giant marketing teams. And so that's why we set the show up. So I and the amount of interesting, inspiring human stories that have come out of the show as a result, I think is sort of testament to what you can achieve if you just take money off the table as an imperative.
Take money off the table and talk about what people are already talking about behind closed doors. It's not rocket science, but it is... It's, as I said earlier, events run on tiny margins. And so for most people, it's not possible to do that. It would simply be impossible to run the model that we work. And that's, you know, that's fine. There's still great content at other events. Mm. But if you are constantly looking to have the most interesting, most diverse, most, yes, like open and honest conversations on stage, then the model that we run is pretty much the only way you can do it.
Yeah, and I thought what you managed to do actually, and then we'll get into you as a journey, is like you the content wasn't geography specific.
No.
Right? So like when you go to a UK health conference, you can't escape the NHS gravity well. You can't. You literally cannot. Yeah. And that skews everything. which is fine because, you know, the UK has the NHS. The NHS is the largest buyer and provider of healthcare services in probably in Europe, actually, as a single entity, I guess. But I thought it was kind of that kind of colours everything, you know, and it makes a lot, it removes a lot of those conversations.
It does. And we're a pan-European event, right? We have sort of the five countries that bring the most people, six countries that bring the most people, five are European, one's the US. And they take up, you know, those six, probably 80% something of our audience. But we need to look and learn from each other. The UK, other bits of Europe are really good at this. Germany, Netherlands, Scandinavia are brilliant at it. It's the model for it. But the UK and France have a lot to learn when it comes to looking outside of our borders at what is happening and how problems are being solved. Like it's almost as though French healthcare systems get to the Pyrenees and they're like, cool, turn them back. And we get to the Channel and go, yeah, nah, we're not
going to get our feet wet there, man.
Right? Which is wild because look, there are arguably too many health tech companies. It's one of the sessions I'm trying to get into the agenda this year. But
oh, wow, that will be spicy.
Oxford style debate on there are too many health tech companies. We did our Oxford debate last year was there's no role for this house believes there's no role for government in healthcare. And it was like,
ooh.
That's the right one of advice. It was a, you know, if it was a curry, it was like three chilies out of five. You don't want five chilies to get out.
No, you don't want people throwing chairs at each other.
Yeah, right. And like, it was really well done. The videos are on the Healthcare Unity website. But the UK doesn't seem to, not all of the UK, it's very difficult to tar it on the same brush, but we are reticent or we're not, we haven't been brought up, I guess, to believe in going over to the Netherlands and going, oh, you've got a solution for this. How? Oh, well, we've been trying to do that. And do you think, could you do it? Will it fit with? We don't seem to do it very well. And so from the off, all of the content was designed, apart from some of the stuff we did with partners that was around, you know, scaling in the Netherlands or scaling in France. Those sessions were, you know, very tailored to the individual geographies. But everything else should be about the CEO of Charité talking to the CEO of UMC Amsterdam and, you know, a senior partner from a VC having a conversation about how it works in their country and what people are doing.
Yeah.
Find parallels. Otherwise you create these weird artificial boundary-based silos that...
Very siloed, yeah.
Pointless.
So last few minutes of the show.
Perfect.
What was your journey to this point? Because you're obviously hugely passionate about what you do. And I know you personally, and I know that you are personally extremely passionately driven about this. But what was your journey to this point?
So I trained as a journalist. Like 16 years ago. I worked freelance as a journalist for a couple of years, and then I moved to Japan, stopped being a journalist. I used to work in sales, and I would sell anything, right? And one of the things about working in sales is that the things you can make the most money out of selling are often either immoral or have an audience that... Or I guess it's very hard to find something that you get passionate about. So I was working in travel sales, essentially, putting together very, very expensive holidays for people with far too much money. And it was fine. It was easy. It was rewarding in a financial sense, but it wasn't rewarding in any other sense. The hours were long. The job satisfaction was nil. And I was like, I can't do this forever. Having lived in Japan, I only sold tours to Japan, like tailor-made tours to Japan. I said, I can't have the same conversations with people for the next 30 years, and I can't keep flogging holidays, basically. And so I started to think, well, what do I care about? What's something I'm passionate about? And that became, well, look, healthcare is probably the biggest thing. I have a lot of family who are nurses, a lot of family who are midwives, who work within the NHS and being more like admin sense. And I was like, the thing that I... the only bit of me that goes, if Great Britain is to keep the adjective great, the only thing I can think of is the NHS. And I'm not deifying it. It is flawed, fundamentally flawed. And it's not perfect, but it is incredible. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have access to. And so if you can get access to it, one of the problems. And so I started thinking, well, like, how do I get into healthcare? I got in touch with a couple of recruiters who were like, no, you're not going to get in without SaaS experience. You flog holidays, stay there, that's your box. And I was lucky enough that Melissa at Lantern gave me an opportunity that then, I've moved through. I went to Q Doctor after Lantern, took Lantern into their first trust in North Bristol, then went to QDoctor during COVID. We got bought by eConsult. That was another opportunity to go and do something different within eConsult, which was great. Hugely grateful to the eConsult team for that, taking that chance. And then I went, well, I've always, health tech companies have a real problem. Not a lot of them have a real problem with retaining junior staff because it's just a job, right? For a lot of people, if you're straight out of uni, you're on £27,000. It's just a job and it pays for your rent and you can just about go on the weekends and that's it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I used to find was that people would leave because they didn't feel engaged. And so I started writing this internal newsletter at QDoctor eConsult around the five NHS stories you should care about this week. And having been a journalist, like, if you read most healthcare news, it's really boring. We talk about healthcare, the most important thing to my mind in the world. We talk about it like it's the back of a cereal pack. It's so dull, dry, and there's no passion to it because we're heavily regulated and because we're risk averse and blah, blah. You can still have fun. You can still have fun while talking about serious things. It's this weird misnomer that seems to have like poisoned the entire industry where everyone is, we're patient-centric, blah, blah. Oh, just no, stop. Like,
yeah,
bring joy, bring passion. The people you want to sell to are joyful human beings who want to feel a connection with you. Use your words to sound like a patronizing dad. And so I started writing this newsletter. James from Somex picked up on it, Jess and James, and asked me to go and write Health Tech Pigeon. That for a bit. And then I submitted an invoice to James for writing Pigeon. And then he messaged me and was like, can I give you a call? I was like, oh, wow. I didn't think the invoice was that. I actually did Pigeon quite quickly this month, but never mind.
Yeah.
And it turned out that they wanted to hire me so I went in as their first like non-founding director. I worked there for 18 months, finished, was going freelance for a bit, and Katie rang me 4 days after I went freelance, my 4-day freelance, and said, you don't want to do freelance? And I said, don't want to work for an event. And as I said before, now I'm here.
Great. Well, what an amazing story, Henry. And timed perfectly like a true pro, right for the end of the show. So, look, Henry, thanks a lot for coming on. It was brilliant. And if people want to find out more about the conference, where would they go?
Europe.health.com or slide into my DMs or anyone else within the organization's DMs. We would be delighted to help.
Brilliant. All right, cool. Well, look, thank you for everyone for listening and we'll be back again next week.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts and we love to find new facts and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.